Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Νομίζω κάνει φοβερή δουλειά στην ομονία.
We call taxi and I put Kilian. I open the door to find. I put him in the taxi and I close the door and I want to go inside and Kilian go out.
You're going to get someone messaging you afterwards saying, why did you mention me?
Hey, fuck them.
Yeah, she say you. I cry because you are here today.
Πάμε σήμερα καμφιά, όλοι μου άμπρε γάμω τα μέσα.
Edo, welcome to a very special edition of the No Chofters podcast. I'm your host, Stel. I don't have Roy here. I don't have Chris here because it's past their bedtime. Chris is hungover from the weekend. Roy is just knackered because he's a little bit younger than me. But, you know, this one doesn't drink or smoke. So, okay, I'll vape. But, you know how it goes. But I've got a very special guest here, a gentleman that I've known for close to 9 years, man. Fucking hell. He's the host of, and owner, should I say, of the very popular Chronicles of Aguna. 20,000 subs on YouTube. Jesus Christ. Harry Simu. Philae, what's going on, man?
All good, man. Thanks for having me, man. Really, really appreciate it. And I have to get this out of the way before we start, because to be honest with you, Stel was the person that really made me think that I could make a podcast. No, genuinely, you know,
I'm
lots
start
of
blushing now. Stop fucking blushing.
No, honestly, because like when you first start a podcast and stuff like that, it can be a little bit demoralizing at the beginning when you're really working hard, but you don't really feel that, you know, it's having that impact. And Stel was one of them people that was like, keep plugging away. And I'm really lucky that now it is what it is and I get to enjoy it. And yeah, so I have to say thanks to Stel, first of all, because, No, honestly, because there's people that you meet, people that they make out that they're your friends and they make out that they want you to do well, but really they don't. And really they're kind of like sitting there almost hoping that you fail. And Stel's not one of those people, man. So I just want to say thanks and really, really appreciate all the advice over the years.
Fucking hell, man. Here's standing on.
You got chinis, isn't it?
You got chinis. I have, honestly. I have, like, redder than your fucking t-shirt. Fucking hell. It's mad, though, because I remember, look, I've been doing podcasts since 2012, and I've told this vendor time and time again. And you're right, you do get your closest friends. They're very like, oh, this ain't gonna go far. Like, do you really want to do this? It's gonna take up a lot of your time. Blah 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 blah. And the thing is, when you start getting going and you gather some momentum, it's great. Like, you're looking at the viewing numbers and you're thinking, eh, that's whatever it is, what it is. And then all of a sudden, you get derailed. Not because of like life in general, obviously kids, etc. But you look at other people, you start looking about what other people are doing. You're thinking, shit, why are they doing big numbers? What? And that's the trap that I fell into when I first started doing podcasts. You know, back in 2012, you had man like KSI, you had, you know, Bazinga and all these other YouTubers, and even like Joel from Cheeky Sports smashing it. You think, why am I not there? But then as time goes on, you're thinking, well, their content isn't what I want to do. Not that it's bad, it's great, don't get me wrong. Even now, I still watch, like, you know, Sidemen and all that. But I'm not like that. Do you know what I mean? That's not me. So when you're trying to get back into it, you need that support from your friends. You need that support. And I'll never forget the time I was working in Wembley and you and I had a Govenda on the phone and you were saying to me, like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is 2017, I want to say. And I remember saying to you, hey, just keep doing what you enjoy doing. Because at the end of the day, no one can tell you that your content isn't right. It's only up to you. You can adjust it to cater to a certain target market, but this is you. And I'm so proud of you there, because I'll never forget you doing Sofa Sports News with DeLuca and, oh my God, fucking...
And Alavi.
Alavi, yeah. And, you know, you're doing it week in, week out, and, you know, you guys know your football. And I'm thinking, why isn't this guy, like, excelling? Why aren't you... And then you release the book, the Chronicles book. Oh, the, it was the Chronicles book, wasn't it? Because season, it was Wenger's last season, wasn't it?
Yeah, which I didn't know that when I started it. I was very lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about them. Let's talk about that then, because obviously you started Chronicles and then it so happened to be Wenger's last season, but you were doing a journal of that season, weren't you?
Yeah, so I wanted... So basically, long story short, I was working in the banking industry and I was in a job that I didn't like, I didn't enjoy. It was one of those things. I'm not going to say I regret doing that, because, you know, it was a solid job. It got me some stability in life in general. But there came a point where you're not, you know, you're not pushing yourself anymore and you're not enjoying what you're doing. And especially when I had kids, I think when I found out I was going to be a dad, I started to think, man, like, I come home from work every day miserable. Like, and then you don't want to, you're not your best self for your kids because you're miserable. You just want to switch off and go to sleep and laze around. And there was no motivation. And so I decided that I wanted to try and do the book. And I didn't really think that it would do anything. I didn't think that I'd even really finish it, to be honest. I was just in between meetings at work and stuff. I would start writing stuff. And what I did was, as you say, I put together like a journal, like a fan's account of the 2017-18 season, which turned out to be, which we only found out in the last few months, Arsene Wenger's last season with the club. And I tried really, really hard to try and get some, you know, people that were involved with Arsenal or had profiles within the Arsenal world to try and help me publicize it a little bit. A lot of really helpful people, a lot of really unhelpful people as well along the way. And in the end, a publisher agreed to publish it, basically. And I didn't think that it would do very well. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it was amazing, but it did much better than I thought it was going to do. And then that kind of gave me the boost that actually I can do something like outside of banking if I want to do it and really focus on it. And yeah, the book was the start of it, really, to be fair. And yeah.
Because I remember, again, when you were writing it, you had some former players get involved in some way. Am I correct?
Yeah, so I had Kevin Campbell agreed to get involved. He agreed to do a little section for the book, but he also agreed to help me with the promotion of it when it came out. Obviously, he's got a big social media following. And I can honestly say, of all the ex-footballers I've now had the pleasure of meeting or working with, Kevin Campbell is right up there in terms of the best person. You know, whatever you need, any help he can give you, he'll do it. And he genuinely wants you to succeed. So he was one. Ray Parler did an interview for the book as well. And for me, you know, that was a crazy experience, because I grew up in that era of Arsenal success. Ray Parler was right at the heart of that, you know, played a big part in the 2002 sides, the 98 side. Was a part of the Invincibles as well. So he was, you know, there in all the sort of great moments. And he did an interview for the book as well, which was really, really cool. And that just added some credibility to something that ultimately had no credibility going into it. So yeah, the ex-players thing definitely gave it a boost for sure.
Mm. So talk to me about this podcast you've been doing then. You've got, as I said, you've got 20,000 subs. I see so much engagement on YouTube, especially when you're doing the lives. And the funny thing is, I've got a friend, Darren, who co-hosts the D&D Footy Factory. He says, if I was a footballer, I'd love to play for Arsenal purely because of the fans on social media. They can destroy you, but they can hype you to the stars, right? So first of all, tell me about this podcast, because as I said, you're doing Sofa Sports News before. You started an Italian football pod as well. Was it Simply Serie A? You were doing it at some point? Because you know your Italian football as well.
Yeah, so Simply Serie A is going to come back. It's something that I really enjoy. I really enjoy Italian football. I always say this to my friends. If I wasn't an Arsenal fanatic, I'd probably spend more time watching Serie A than the Premier League. Something about it, I don't know if it's our generation still, but, you know, like when we were growing up, it was amazing. And
I've got 10 years on you. What are you talking about, our generation? Yeah, I've got 10 years on you, man.
Anyway, you know what I mean? I was trying to be polite, but you know what I mean?
I'm not going to call you Pachoyero, yeah.
But you know what I mean? People that grew up basically before the 2000s, like, really have a thing with Italian football, I think. The history of it, the magic of it. And so I'm hoping to bring that back in the new season with some support from 90 Min, who I'm working with really closely now. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get that back up and running. But the Chronicles of Aguna was basically a continuation of the book. That's how it started. So it's a little bit different to a lot of other podcasts in that it isn't a regular panel all the time. It's literally a lot of the time a sole voice, and that's my voice. It's me literally sitting there. Used to be just turning on the microphone and just spilling out my feelings about Arsenal on any subjects, any games. Then it kind of developed a little bit to the point where we were getting guests, and we do some shows in the week now with different panels. But I wanted it to be different to all the others. Like, there's so many Arsenal podcasts out there that are a panel, the same panel every week. And that's great as well. But I just wanted to do something different. And it's basically the book in a podcast format. And then it evolved from just audio to YouTube as well. And YouTube took it to another level, because now I find it is much easier to do an hour show basically by yourself when you've got lots of brilliant people in the chat, you know, throwing questions at you, disagreeing with what you're saying, agreeing with what you're saying, making you think and go down other routes of thought. There's so much that you can do with it. And that's what it is today. As you say, it's grown really quick, quicker than I ever thought it would, to a point beyond what I ever thought it would. And I'm really lucky that it's given me opportunities to do other things as well in the football space, which I'm really enjoying.
You mentioned you're doing work with 90 Min at the moment, and they're huge, aren't they? They're huge. Now, what I want to know is, how have you managed to overcome the obstacle of challenges such as Arsenal Fan TV? And then obviously Troops has gone to do his own thing. DT, we're not going to mention him, but we know he went to do his own thing, among other Arsenal YouTubers. Because let's get it right, Arsenal, from a social media perspective, I think you guys, maybe, and Liverpool, maybe United as well, are up there with the most YouTubers out there, you know. So How have you managed to keep the consistency, to keep that, you know, your head above water, but also challenge these guys? As I mentioned, you've got a big following.
It's a hard one, because I actually think that with AFTV, listen, they do what they do. It's not my cup of tea, but they do what they do, and they do what they do well. Okay. If it wasn't well done, they wouldn't be at the place they are at now with 1.5 million subs. It's constantly growing. They put out a hell of a lot of content, and they keep pushing, and fair play to them. But what I found as a little bit of a driver was to kind of, I wanted to show people that not all Arsenal fans, and listen, on AFTV, there's a lot of good people. Don't get me, I'm not saying that all of them are bad, but there is a lot of, there has been in the past, more so than there is today, some, I think, actors. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but people that have played a game to grow their profile, and people who have probably, when they've been feeling frustrated about something, have overblown that in order to try and get views and to try and create a character that they can then live by and basically break into the space with. I think a lot of that is gone now from AFTV, but that stigma is still there. Like, there are still, when you talk to a non-Arsenal fan, the first thing they say is, oh, what do you think about AFTV? If I had a pound for every time somebody asked me that question, I'd be a millionaire. So one of the things I want to do is I wanted to show that AFTV isn't all Arsenal fans, right? Not all Arsenal fans are like that. And there are Arsenal fans out there that are measured, that do think about things properly. Not everybody's going to agree with my opinions and my views, and that's fine. They don't have to. But I think as long as you can construct an argument well and you can back up your thought process, then I think that people ultimately will respect what you're doing. And if you keep doing that, you have longevity. There isn't a shelf life to that, but there is a shelf life to being crazy and screaming and shouting. And so, you know, that's why that's what I try to do. And I think that hopefully that's what I'm going to continue to do, because I just think that people are over that stuff now. And there's not really as much clamor for it as there was maybe 2-3 years ago. I don't know what you think about it. Do you know what?
The funny thing is that last bit that you said, just it lit a light bulb. It was like that light bulb moment. Do you know what I mean? You know, you're probably too young to remember this, but the mid to late 90s, you had South Park. It blew up on the scene, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Cartman, Killing Kenny, Jesus, Kanye West, whatever, right? And it became very, very popular because it went against the grain. They said a lot of things. There are a lot of things that you wouldn't be able to do now. No fucking chance,
yeah.
Right? But it was massive. And that was, again, round about the time when the WWE had their Attitude Era, again, going against the grain. And I think something similar has occurred with AFTV when they hit their peak. You know, no one was doing that. You saw troops effing and blinding. You saw DT shouting. Robbie obviously standing there with a mic laughing his ass off. Your tie. And that's got a ceiling. And I think they reached that ceiling. And that's probably why Robbie's gone to do his own thing now. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy with things that happen in the background with various people and, you know, the fans get turning on them, etc., etc. You could write a book about the AFTV and the shenanigans that have occurred. But it's been successful, as you said. And you can't, as much as people despise it, you can't deny that they have kind of been game changers. Because we've seen fans of other clubs try to do something similar. And it hasn't worked. Granted, you've got Goldbridge, who did the United Stand, and now he's gone on to do TalkSport. But he wasn't like AFTV. He was very reactive, but he had a little bit extra to his character. He had a little bit extra to... He isn't just watching a United game. He was doing the FIFA stuff. He was doing his own... like you, in the sense that he was doing his own... It was on his own, right?
Mm.
But I just think now, as you said, people are bored of that. They want to be educated. And it's like, show me something that hasn't been done before. And then something new is going to happen and everyone's going to start pointing to that. That's the way that media evolves. Yeah. And let's get it right. Media is just so fragmented now. It's not like back in the day where you had, okay, in the UK, we had BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4, then Channel 5. Now you've got everything. You've got Twitch, YouTube, TikTok now. It's there's so much content available. So to stand out and to be up there is very difficult. And I'll tell you what, this is a segue to my next, topic. You know, you mentioned people getting fed up with, you know, the way that people behave. You have kept true to yourself. You kept your content to the way that you want it to be. And as a result, you've done work with the BBC, with TalkSport. If you went down the route of, say, those people that we mentioned before and perhaps other Arsenal YouTubers, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing now. You wouldn't be getting that, you know, attention. You wouldn't be invited on these shows because what you're doing is, okay, they'll say it's clean cut. But the way I see it is that you know what you're talking about. And let's get it right. You have been a little bit angry on some of your pods.
Of course.
You know,
yeah,
that's normal
as
supporters.
Of course, yeah. And that's the way I've always looked at it. I've always looked at it like my goal is to work not just on my own podcast, but in other media sort of areas. And that's what I've always wanted to do. So I don't want to be a guy that you look at and say, no, I can't have him on because he might do something that is going to jeopardize our show or is going to jeopardize, you know, our reputation. And I've worked really, really hard to make sure that I don't fall into that trap, even though I've come out of the stadium fuming at times and wanting to, you know, really lash out on something or someone. And, you know, but you've got to be able to control that. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you're less passionate or that you don't care or you don't feel it or you don't feel the pain as much as other fans do. You just have to learn to channel it. And, you know, one of the things that happened to me at the start of the year, which, you know, a few months ago, I wouldn't have even wanted to talk about it, but I got involved in a debate with some Liverpool fans online.
Oh, this is where they pulled up your tweets from the pod.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, bruv.
So basically, long story short, I tweeted something along the lines of, do you remember when Liverpool had the Carabao Cup game with Arsenal postponed? And the line was they had
the COVID,
12
wasn't it?
Suspected cases or whatever. They got the game cancelled. And the next day, they came out and said, oh, you know, 11 of the 12 were false positives, if you remember. And I said something along the lines of, well, in order to have the game postponed, they probably should have had to prove the cases as opposed to have been able to get it postponed on the basis of suspected ones. And a load of Liverpool fans piled on. Some of them went back through my tweets to, some of them were when I was 16, 17 years old.
2012, 2013, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah, just some of them were.
Twitter started.
Yeah,
Twitter exactly. Had been around like 2 years.
And they were tweets that I'd sent to my friends when I had no followers. You know, things like, I think I said, F off you Scousers, you know, which you would say that in a football stadium, particularly in those days. And it didn't mean that I hated everybody from Liverpool, like, or it wasn't coming from that place. But obviously, when something like that is found online, that was it. The pile-on came. And for me, I'm honestly going to say that was those 3-4 days after was probably the lowest I've ever been, because you feel like you've worked so, so hard for the last 5 years and some idiots come along and found something that, you know, I held my hands up. It was wrong. I shouldn't have tweeted it. But somebody is going to basically try and paint you in a picture that is not accurate to today.
Yeah.
I'm not the same guy that I was when I was 18 as I am now at 31 with two kids.
Anyone, exactly. If you're still the same person as you were when you're 18, then you got a problem,
yeah.
Like a mental problem, as far as I'm concerned, because people evolve and we educate ourselves. Jummy, we see things, we, you know, you travel, you meet new people, you know, the world evolves. And if you don't move with the times, then you're going to get stuck in the rut. And I tell you, when it happened to you, I felt so sorry for you, because, you know, I know what it's like. I had it myself at the end of December before New Year, you know, with an Upwell player. And that was fucking laughable. And I laugh back at it now, because it was like, Jesus, this guy had to make up a lie to try and knock me down, you know, because, all right, I poked the tiger a little bit with some memes and some Photoshops. And, you know, he messaged me and I took a screenshot of the message and then I kind of did a Photoshop with that. And then what he said could have got me killed, you know, to say I said this and that and yada yada. And I had people in my DMs threatening me, we're going to do this to you, this and that. And I'm like, right, I need to get my solicitor involved. Fortunately, my boss is a lawyer. And we dealt with it the best way that we could. And the thing is, even though he didn't admit to being in the wrong, the message that he sent to me was basically, I don't give a fuck like what you do. And that was enough for me to say he knew he fucked up, but he just doesn't want to say it. But anyway, listen, it is what it is. Like, I've got no grudges towards the guy. I blame myself as well, because I shouldn't have taken it to another level. But for him to turn around and say, I said all of these personal things about him and some country I couldn't even fucking find on the map, for me, that's low. But to be fair, I had a lot of Upwell fans saying, you're not like that. We know you're not like that. My boss was cool about it. There's so many people that said, you know, that's not you.
That was the thing as well. Like, until I started to speak to people, like, because for me, the first thing was, oh my God, I finally got myself into a position where this is my job. Like, my job now is to talk about football and it's all going to go away. Like, nobody's going to want to use me anymore. Nobody's going to want to book me anymore. And like, as I gradually started to have the conversations with people, like some of my bosses at 90 Min, you know, obviously what I tweeted was wrong. But they were understanding of the fact that this was a hell of a long time ago before I had any profile whatsoever. And, you know, it's not a reflection of who I am now or the person that they've been working with for the last few years. And then I spoke to TalkSport, and TalkSport were like, you know, we're not saying it's right.
No disrespect, but TalkSport have got a lot of people on their show who've said and done a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly that. Right, but at the time, and I know that now, but at the time you don't think that way. At the time, you just think like everything's gone.
Because you're thinking you're up and coming. Whereas these people, they're established, you know? Yeah. No disrespect. They're going to say, well, who's Harry Simeon in comparison to Trevor Sinclair? You know, you haven't played in a World Cup. You haven't played for Man City and West Ham. So, of course, in your mind, you're thinking, I've worked my bollocks off to get this far. And then you've got some people trawling through old tweets. And the thing is, it's like they get satisfaction from trying to cancel you. You know, I remember that people putting out tweets, oh, he's deactivated. We've won. I'm like, he's deactivated because he doesn't want all these fucking alerts. He'll be back. Doesn't he? I mean, fucking idiots, man.
No, that's it. And you just like what I take away from it is, and I guess the reason it was so hard to take was because I knew that you could have gone through the last few years when I've been working in this job, and I've been very, very careful. So to know that I had been careful then, but you've gone back to try and catch me out it was like, why would someone do that? Why would someone try and take your career down? That's what really, over a debate about a game of football, that's what really got to me. But, you know, I've learned a lot from it. Like, I'm not going to say I'm completely over it, because, you know, I got invited on something Liverpool based the other day, and I just said, look, mate, I'm not interested in having a load of Liverpool fans piling on me. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do it. Because why would I want to bring it all up again? Like, it's not helpful to me. But, you know, you also learn who your friends are at a time like that. There was people that I thought I was very close to within the industry, if you like, that actually now I haven't even got the time of day for. Like, I wouldn't even pick up the phone if they called me now, because of, not because I don't expect everybody to go online and be like, you know, getting themselves into the firing line in order to defend you. But I also don't expect people to go around chatting about you behind your back and all of that stuff. And there was a bit of that. And there was someone, I'm not going to obviously name names, that tried to use the opportunity to cash in and take a role that had just been offered to me, and use that as their way in. And that was something that I was really sort of annoyed and disappointed about. But then, you know, once the calls started coming again, and, you know, TalkSport were very upfront with me, they said, look, we'll keep you off air for a week, let it die down a bit, and then we'll go back to normal. And now I'm doing more shows there than I've ever done. And, you know, and as the calls started coming in again for all the other different places, then you kind of just move on from it. But it was really, really tough, man. And it's just, it's like, I look at, so I've always looked at social media as a really good thing, because of all the opportunities it's given me, but it can really easily be a bad thing as well. And it can really be like, you know, something that's a negative on your mental health, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing I wanted to ask you. How did that affect you from the point of, you know, as you said, you felt like shit. You're thinking, what's happening? I mean, you're married with kids. Obviously, that's going to have an effect on you as well. You know, you're with your little ones and you can't focus on spending time with them, because you're too busy worried about your phone buzzing. I'm guessing you put your phone on silent for a good few hours or just turned it off. But obviously you've got family and friends that want to see how you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. So how did that take its toll on you as well, man?
Yeah, that's the worst bit, because people are calling you to see how you are because they genuinely care, but you don't want to go over it 101 times. Like, you just don't want to keep talking about it. But by that same token, I can't say I switched off from it, because I kept searching my name to see what they were saying about me. Like, you can't switch off from it. And I remember I put out an apology for the tweet, because there was tweets that I did say, and there was a few that I didn't as well. There were some tweets that people had doctored, if you like, to try and make me seem worse and to try and continue the kind of tear down. And I don't know, like, someone I work with said to me, like, when I put out an apology, I did say, you know, I apologize for what I said, and, you know, this doesn't represent what I am today, but equally I'm not going to have people putting bullshit tweets out that I didn't say. And a few people kind of said to me, well, you know, you kind of just poured more oil on the fire there, because then people were going, oh, that's not a proper apology, blah 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 blah. But at the end of the day, that's me. I'm that type of person. If you come at me, I'm gonna fight back. And if I'm, you know, if it was only tweets that I did write, then yeah, the apology would have been very, very different. But when you're writing tweets, apparently, that I've said this and that about certain people, it just, you know, for me, I was angry at the time. Maybe if I did it now, if I had to apologize for it today, I might have written it differently. But at the time, I was still as angry as I was sort of disheartened, and you know, that's just the way it came out. But then once you go on your own thing, and like, I think the good thing I did was, the first thing I did back was I did Chronicles of Iguna,
right?
And the comments was literally full of people being like, come on, man, like, we know you're not like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of gave me the thing that, yeah, there's loud people on social media that are just constantly there, but that's not always the majority. And that kind of opened my eyes to that. And then you begin to move past it and just get on with it.
Did you get much abuse on that show? Because I remember you doing one. It was literally a few hours after everything kicked off, innit?
Mm.
And you did it to address it. I can't remember if you got some abuse. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because perhaps, as you said, it was the best thing you could have done, not just for the reasons that you gave, but also it gave people the opportunity to vent, to let it out. And then that was pretty much it for a week or so, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, even now that you'll get the odd person, if I do something that will pop up and say, you know, why have you got this guy on? And he said this in January 2012 about this. And you still get that from time to time, but it's over time, there's less and less of it because these people, they just look for anything to jump on and someone else will have done something somewhere else that they will now feel is their priority to, you know, keep highlighting. So you end up in a situation where you kind of start to become a little bit more immune to it. Like if I see a comment now, it does get to me a little bit for a few seconds, I'm not going to lie, but I know that it's just the odd idiot here and there now. And I'm kind of like, I've hardened off to it. I don't sit there and overthink it anymore. But yeah, there was a lot of abuse at the time. And the first time I went back on 90 Min, the first time I went on TalkSport, you feel nervous because you're thinking like, I've just spent, you know, I've just had this awkward conversation with my employers about this. And the last thing I want now is it for it to keep coming up and them to have to keep thinking about it and keep considering it. So when it goes away, you're obviously grateful for that, but it will never completely go away. There'll always be someone that will come out with it, and it is what it is.
Well, yeah, to be honest, man, I mean, look, I don't think he'll mind me bringing this up. You know, Rodri is a good friend of mine. He's a fantastic friend of mine. You know, we've been mates for many, many years, and you know the story. And he still gets it. He still gets it to this day. You know, he might put out a tweet and then you read the responses and you'll get, oh, yeah, but your brother did this. And I'm like, people just, like, they've got nothing better to do.
That's exactly it.
This is what cracks me up. I'm like, do you go on social media just to give people abuse? Is your life so irrelevant that you have nothing better to do? That when you see someone put up a tweet, oh, I remember something that he said like 15 years ago or something that happened 20 years ago. I'm just going to bring that up. I mean, it's beggar's belief. It really is. And the thing is, it happened to me. It happened to you. It happened to Carlo Garganese. I don't know if you saw that as well. Mm. Carlo that hosts the Italian football pod. For crying out loud, he put out a tweet about Kulusevski a few months ago. And Kulusevski puts out this Instagram video with a clip tweet about, okay, obviously Kulusevski didn't make the video. Someone did. And I'm like, why is this, what's his problem? Like, you're a grown man footballer. You're making millions. Why do you have to put in the amount of shit that Carlo got? And I messaged him. I said, mate, give it a couple of weeks and then people are going to forget it. Yeah, you're going to get more people messaging you from time to time about it, but no one's really going to give a shit. And to be honest, as fucked up as this sounds, it's free publicity. Like, people are going to start listening to your show just for the outlandish thing that you said or something that was done before. It's weird. It's weird that it works out, man.
The thing is as well, like, and this incident has kind of changed my outlook a lot, because I would have quite happily gone through Twitter, seen a tweet that I thought was probably unfair on my club, and I would have responded to it. Now, I never used to go on there and be like, you're an effing this and you're an, but I would respond to it. And I think when you've got a big following, and I'm not saying I have, but when you're a footballer like Dejan Kulusevski, I think you've got to be mindful of what you're about to unlock, because you're about to open a chest of shit that is going to come flying at this person. And it might not impact you, and you might think it's funny and you might think it's a bit of a laugh, but that person is going to get a shit ton of abuse, and you don't know what's going on in their life. You don't know what they're like mentally. You don't know what an impact that's going to have on them. And now, honestly, I'm completely different still. When I go through Twitter, if I see something I disagree with, I might have in the past gone, you know what, I'm going to comment on this. Now I don't. I just ignore it. I just literally go past it.
It's not worth the hassle.
No,
it's not worth the hassle.
It's not worth the hassle.
Not worth it.
But it's also not worth what you might put someone through, and you don't have a clue where they're at. Like, you don't have a clue what you're putting them through. You don't have a clue of what the impact's going to be. And I think as a footballer, as a big influencer, as any of those things, you got a responsibility to not start pylons on people, because you might be able to take it, but you don't know if they can. And imagine having that on your conscience. My God, I don't think I could live with myself.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you a very quick story. A few days ago, actually, I was on TikTok, and TikTok is probably more toxic than Twitter, believe it or not. And someone put up a comment on a video that I did. And do you know what? It was a comment that really wouldn't have rattled me any other day. But I was having such a fucking shit day. And I saw this comment. I was like, do you know what? Let me do a bit of research here. I checked the guy's profile. I saw he's got this profile photo. I then found out he's got an Instagram profile. And on his Instagram profile, he had the name of the club that he plays for at youth level. And the thing is, you know, the job that I do, right? I know various people in the game. And it so happens to be that I know the head of the academy that he plays for. And I sent him a message. I'm like, mate, have a word with this kid, because he doesn't know who he's talking to, right? Give him a bit of have a go at him. I just said, listen, this is what he sent me. I don't really appreciate this kind of abuse. It's completely like unprovoked as well. It's not as if I was like poking the tiger, and then within like 20 minutes, I get a DM on Instagram from the lad saying, I'm really sorry. So I'm like, mate, listen, I appreciate you being man enough to apologize. You know, it's done, it's in the past, but you need to be careful, because you don't know who you're messaging. You know, obviously it's a small world, but I could be just anyone. People see me on camera, like same with you. And they think, it's just some pushed Inglés or some Charlie that's just doing all these videos. But I work in the game, man. Like, there are so many people that I know in the industry, would be in football, in broadcast media, same with you. You know, you don't know who you're receiving messages from, which is why I'm very mindful as to what I say and what I do. Yeah, I've learned a lot in the past couple of years, especially with Cypriot football and Cyprus in general. You got to be very careful who you talk about, whatever, because this one is Gumbaro with that one and yada, yada, yada. I didn't realize how small Cyprus was until I started doing this pod. You know, I've had people messaging me saying, oh, you said this about that player and he's related to this one who follows you. And he went and told him, like, oh, bruv, like, this is football, man. You got to be thick-skinned. But at the same time, was I being a little bit over the top? Yes. But at the same time, my sense of humor differs to the sense of humor that they're used to. So it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult to find that balance, to be popular, to be putting out the content that suits people and caters to what they want. And there's that other line where below, where it's like, fuck, if you do one thing wrong, boom, that's it. Finished. Yeah.
I think people are starting to, I think we got into this territory, particularly in England. I don't know what it was like in Cyprus, but we got to this point quite recently where you could not, and probably still cannot, say anything. You cannot have an opinion that goes against the grain without getting some form of abuse. And so people are almost scared to have that. And what I've noticed is that although when you say something that is on the line of unacceptable in some people's eyes, you will get loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of people coming at you. There are just as many people that are sitting there thinking, back off, like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, that's his view, it's fine. But they're just not vocal about it because they know that they're going to get a pile on and they know it could jeopardize something that they're doing. And that's where we're at now. So I think that there's a lot more mature people out there than we think there is. And I found that out with my situation when I was speaking to people that I thought would be like, oh no, we're not going to use him anymore. They were like, look, I'm not saying what you did was right. And I completely agree, what I did was wrong. But they were also like, I'm not going to really let that change my opinion of you based on one tweet that you put out, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever it was. So that's the thing as well. I think like that maturity needs to be there. And I think it is there with a lot of people, but nobody wants to come out and say it because of the shit that they get as a consequence.
It's incredible, isn't it? There's so much shit going on in the world. You've got a war going on in Ukraine.
Exactly.
Right? We've got fucking literally close to famine in the UK right now, the way that things are, man. So many food banks everywhere, people unemployed, and, you know, and people are just more worried about Love Island and shit like that. It just shows you the fucking priorities of what's going on in the world. But anyway, listen, we've spoken about this in quite detail. Like, I never realised that we could go this far, but Let's talk about Arsenal then, Rhea. Your beloved Arsenal. Now, I know you're very calculated in your analysis of Arsenal, let's put it that way. And there are many people that believe Arteta is in the right man. The funny thing is, when I look at the way that Arsenal fans talk about Arteta, the in-out, shake-it-all-about kind of people, it's very similar to Cypriot football, you know? And we had Henning Berg at Omonia, won the league. Okay, we were awarded the league in the first season. Second season, we won it. And lo and behold, halfway through the season, he sacked because results were shit. We fell out of the top six. And we brought in Neil Lennon, that's won the cup. Is the fan behaviour when Berg was going through a really difficult time reminded me of the Wenger days of Arsenal, you know, because Wenger got so much stick from Arsenal fans and Berg was getting so much stick from Omonia fans. And it was almost like 60-50 in the sense that 60% of people wanted him gone, but 60-40, 60-50. I was shit with my maths. 60-40 in the sense that 60% wanted him gone, 40% wanted him to stay. It was very similar to that with Wenger, wasn't it?
Yeah, the thing is with this whole fan behavior thing, it's like, I think it's fundamentally lost on a lot of us what our role is as supporters. Like, we're supporters, a supporter supports and gets behind their club. And I'm not saying that you have to blindly agree with every decision that they make or that you have to support every decision that they make. But I do think you have a responsibility, especially when you're at the game, to go there and get behind your team and support and create an environment that gives your team, your players, the greatest chance of succeeding on the day. And one of the things that used to get on my nerves at the back end of the Wenger days was that whenever we weren't playing very well, the crowd would be moaning and they'd be groaning and they'd be complaining. And what that did was just transmit this really shit energy onto the pitch as well. And you could just feel it within the stadium. And one of the reasons I'm actually okay with where we are at now and what we're doing now is that I feel like that's changing a little bit. Like I felt like last season at Emirates Stadium, there was so much more support for the team. And I think that helped. Our home record was much, much better. We got better results. Okay, we missed out on the top four. Nobody gave us a chance in hell of being in the top four at the start of the season.
I did.
There, you did.
I did.
Not many. Not many Arsenal fans did. But now the same Arsenal fans are saying, oh my God, fifth is a disaster of a season. Like, it's just flip-flop behaviour. And like you said, Henning Berg, first year, Omonia get the title. Second year, obviously he wins it. And then after a short, well, I don't know how short exactly it was, but after a relatively January, short, bad spell, he's gone.
Well,
it's too reactionary.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't know what the atmosphere was like at Arsenal when Wenger was there, but from what I understand, under Emery, inside the club, the players were taking the piss out of the guy. That's from what I understand anyway. And Arteta's obviously come in and he's shaking things up, you know, getting rid of Aubameyang, Guendouzi, Ozil. Personally, I think he's done really well getting rid of a lot of bad eggs. And changing the ambience, so to speak, in the dressing room. And as you mentioned, the results have been good. And he's playing a lot of younger players who are hungry. Okay, it will take time to turn around. But I think he's doing a good job. You can only play with the hands you've been dealt with. But tell me something. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, Arsenal spent big last summer and they fell out of the Champions League. Was it that much of a disaster that you didn't qualify for Champions League given the circumstances? All right, albeit you spent big in the summer.
I think the thing that hurt was that it was Tottenham that got there ahead of us.
Right.
Honestly, I do think that that's what has made it seem to Arsenal fans like more of a disaster than it probably actually was. I think had United finished above us, given what they did in that summer, Ronaldo, Varane, Sancho, people would have just put their hands up and said, you know what, they're better than us. You know, they finished second the season before. They brought in some really good signings. And you'd have just said, okay, we're not there yet. But because Tottenham had the turmoil that they did, they sacked Nuno Espirito Santo. They had to change managers midway through the season. There was lots of stuff with Conte. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? He was coming out and sort of giving mixed messages. It looked like Tottenham were in a mess. And then when you see the position we were in and the fact that we then surrendered it, it was really, really hard to take and hard to process. But I always said during the season that when we look back once the dust has settled, we'll actually see that there was a fair amount of progress there from Arsenal. Signings that people laughed at when we made them, you know, ourselves included. Ramsdale. I mean, I remember when we signed Ramsdale thinking, if we've got £25 million to spare here, why the hell haven't we gone and signed the central midfielder? And instead, we went and bought a goalkeeper who, at the time, I don't think many people believed was an upgrade on Bern Leno. So that was one. There was the Ben White signing. You know, there was question marks. Did we slightly overpay for him? Probably. But he had a good season overall. Odegaard, when people were clamoring for James Maddison last summer, we got Martin Odegaard in and he had a great season and James Maddison didn't until, what, the last few weeks of the campaign. So I think what Arsenal have done is almost earned the right now to say, back the hell off us for at least another summer and let us continue with what we're doing, because the progress is clear to see. If we had been steadily in fifth throughout the season, it would have been read very, very differently. But because of the way we kind of surrendered it, it's put a negative downtone on everything that we've done. And I hate that. You know, I think that football is something that should bring you joy and is something that should be your hobby and your love. Why would you actively want to be angry about stuff that really is not worth being angry about? I don't get that. Like, if it was a disaster, I'd say it was a disaster. And you've known me for long enough to know that if I don't like something or don't agree with something at the club, I'll say it. But because I genuinely think that we are doing a lot of the right things now behind the scenes and moving in the right direction, I get called Arteta's lawyer or somebody who's begging for a job at the club. This is the kind of comments I get on a daily basis. And it's just like, yeah. I just don't look to be angry for no reason. That's all. That's literally it.
Mate, I know what you mean. And do you know what? There's another person who I'd like to bring up very quickly. Frimpong. Right, yeah. Frimps, love him to bits, man. Like he's hilarious. His content is fantastic. But I'll tell you what, he started off doing videos talking about Arsenal, talking about the club. I'm sure he was getting people saying, "Oh, you just want a job at the club." Well, look, he's working for the club now. You know,
yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, what's the problem? What's the problem? You're doing something that you love. This is the thing, and you're not putting a gun to 20,000 people's heads and saying, "Right, you got to tune in." If you don't want to tune in, don't. If you do, great. Thank you for your support. That's how it should be. But I don't know, man. Maybe my thought process is...
No, you're right. There's one guy on my Twitter that he literally can't stand me. Everything I say, he disagrees with. And he goes to the effort every single day of listening to the show, taking quotes from it, and then tweeting them and having a go at me about them. And I'm like, mate, you don't have to listen. Like, nobody's putting, as you said, a gun to your head and telling you to listen, but you still do it anyway. So, like, it just goes to show.
Do you think it's a grown man doing it? Do you think it's a grown man or like a teenager at school or something?
I don't know. I hope it's not a grown man. for his family's sake, I hope it's not a grown man, but I don't know, to be honest. Because it's always these people with anonymous accounts. Like, you don't know what their actual name is. You don't know what they look like. You know, it's really easy to be a warrior behind a keyboard, isn't it?
Of course. Of course. What about when you go to games, though? Do you get people talking to you, coming up to you and all that?
Yeah. More so last season. Obviously, the season before, there was the COVID stuff. The seasons prior to COVID, the podcast wasn't as big. And, you know, you'd get the odd one come up to you and say hi. But now, yeah, it's really nice. Like, go to the game, you get a few people come up to you, you know, shake your hand, say thanks for the content or... you know, want to have a little chat. And it's great. It's nice because it's nice to feel, it's not that you're after recognition, but it's nice to know that your content is reaching people and that they're appreciative of it. It's a motivation.
Yeah. The first person that ever told me that they got approached was, God rest his soul, Chig, who had the Guna Eagle Eye podcast. And I remember, I'll never forget the time he told me, he goes, I was on the tube, Bounds Green Station, I think it was, on the Piccadilly line. And he goes, someone just came up to me on the tube. He goes, oh, you're a Chig. Yes. Like, what'd you do? Like, what'd you do when someone comes up to you? You're thinking to yourself, like, no one watches this. Like, okay, no one that you know that you're going to see in the street. But you don't realize. I mean, fucking, you know, I hate to bring this back up, but, you know, when we went to the cup final in Cyprus, people were coming up to us in the street, in the stadium, just wanting to take photos and talk to us. And it was just, my hair stood on end because you're thinking, fucking hell, like, you know, we're just normal human beings, but you're getting this adulation and this love and this support. And you're thinking, Jesus, like, I appreciate it so much. You know, yeah, I appreciate it so much. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
No, yeah, for sure. And the one time I was really shocked was when someone come up to me was when I was in Cyprus just before COVID. I was sitting eating somewhere at Finigouez in Larnaca, and some geezer literally came up to me and I was like, bloody hell, man. I'm on holiday, man.
It wasn't Grigori, was it, by any chance? He's on
No, it wasn't. Bazooki, right? It was actually an English guy. That's why I found it so weird, because I was in Cyprus and an English guy came up to me. It's like...
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, man. Well, look, we've done this for almost an hour. I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, because obviously, you know, I'm his Ibnon, man. I'm his Nannai. But thank you again for jumping on. I want to quickly talk about Anorthosi, the club that you support. Okay, you must say support, but they're your Cypriot team, and I know you're not a huge Cypriot football fan. But yeah, tell me. Well, listen, I've got no problem, man. I've got no problem with that.
No,
you
know, go on.
Support, you know? So tell me this support for this club of yours. Where did it come from? Do you follow them much? Do you know much about them? How they're getting on, etc., etc.
I've got to be honest, I don't know much about where they're at now. I don't know much about sort of the ins and outs of it. I've got to be honest, it's one of those things where, like, as you say, I've never really been into Cypriot football. I have tried to get into it at various points, but I've just never been able to kind of stick with it. A lot of the reason being that you can't really watch it in England, or you couldn't in years gone by. You couldn't get access to it. Like, now we've got IPTV and things like that. And you can, if you really want it, you can find it.
Fire stick.
Yeah.
Sorry.
In the past, you couldn't get that access to it. And so I found it hard from England to be like really involved and invested in it. The reason I say when people ask me who I support is Anorthosi is because some of my cousins in Cyprus support them. When I used to come to Cyprus, they used to take me to the games. I went to the stadium a few times, you know, and things like that. And that's literally why, like, I say them, but I don't, you know, like, when it comes to European competition, I want to see all the Cypriot teams do well. You know, I'm very
all of
much,
them,
all of them,
all of them,
all of them, okay. All of them, honestly, because I don't have no skin in the game, man. I really don't. And one of the things that I'll be honest, we're on a Cypriot football podcast, so why not be honest? One of the things that put me off Cypriot football when I was younger is the politics. That for me, it put me off it when I was younger, because I feel like football is football. And I feel like there was too much emphasis put on the other side of it. And I get that, but it never appealed to me, because I couldn't get my head around it as a young kid. Like, you know, you say dexios, you say aristeros, whatever. Couldn't. Like, for me, all of that was, and I'm not saying it's a, you know, there's people out there that are very passionate about it, but to me, I never understood it, and I couldn't get my head around it. And I used to have family members saying to me, you know, you can't support them because of this and that. And the truth is, I don't really support any of the clubs. I just want them to do well. You know, this was a present from a cousin of mine. That's why I've got it. And it is what it is, man. But listen, I just want to see Cypriot football doing well. I traveled, when was it? Not last year, the year before. Or was it a few years? It might have been 3 or 4 years ago now. I traveled up to Scotland to watch Cyprus against Scotland.
Okay.
Cyprus got a late equaliser and made it 1-1. And we went literally crazy in the away. And then Scotland went down the other end and scored and won 2-1. So, yeah, listen, I love Cyprus. I want to go as much as I possibly can. And I want all the teams to do well. But It's a casual fandom, if you like, and nothing
understandable. There's a comment here: Arsenal to face Omonia in the Europa League. It could happen. It could happen because we've got a Europa League playoffs. We haven't, obviously, the draws haven't been made yet, but we're guaranteed Conference League. But this season coming, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Cypriot teams potentially in Europe. Apollon Champions League. Same with AEK, because there's 2 Cypriot teams Champions League got out. Apoel and Aris, who got promoted last season, but they've got a Ukrainian owner and they've spent big, and they finished fourth above your boys. They beat them on the final day to get top four, which, to be honest, with Anorthosi, it was a strange season for you guys, because you started off well. Amir Vardar came in, you started off really well, And then it kind of like fell off a little bit during the European group stages, because that's normal. That was always going to happen when you're putting so much emphasis on that. And then he got rid of two of your strikers. One of them was Ketsbaya's godson, he got rid of. The other one was Carl Lafferty. And you didn't have a striker till January. And you brought in a striker. And to be honest, up until the penultimate game of the season, you played Abua away. If you beat them, you'd have ended second. Mm. But you drew that one. And then you had to beat Aris to stay in the top four. And you lost at home. And they overtook. So it was weird. It was weird how the title went this season. I mean, even Abollon winning the title, they, up until the third from last game in the playoffs, they hadn't won a game. You know, and they played up well. They beat them, who were breathing down their neck. And that was practically it for the title. So it was a very competitive season there, Harry. But we're gonna bring back This Is Mapa, and we're going to put it on this channel, our Cypriot League review. So I'm looking forward to bringing that back. We've got more.
Well, there's a place for me now to go to keep up to date then, because all I do now is I've got the app Flash Score. And I just jump on Flash Score and I check the scores and I look at the table and all of that. But I don't, it's hard, man. I guess, I don't know about you, but I've got to the point where, listen, I love all football and I, you know, it's
a lot.
Everything.
There's a lot to,
there's a lot. And I do have days, like, I'm not going to lie now. Like, I have days sometimes, particularly on like Europa Conference League nights or whatever, where I'll go, do you know what? I watched football on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I'm going to watch it all weekend. I think I'll have a night off tonight.
To take a line from Friends, you're lucky you're not a gynecologist. I see one more of those.
It's true, but even my 3-year-old son is walking around saying, when are we going to watch football? Like, because that's
good though.
It's good in a way, but it just goes to show that like the brainwashing is real. Need a break.
My little one, she's not too much into football, but she knows about Omonia. She sings a song. She knows the players as well. It is what it is. We're teaching them well. There was one more thing I wanted to ask you before we wrapped it up. We had a question here, which I'm sorry for ignoring. Do you think Arteta was right to get rid of Aubameyang?
I do. And not because of footballing reasons. I think that, you know, it was clear to see that we could have done with more goals from the striker position. And, you know, some people will argue that is ultimately one of the reasons that we missed out on the Champions League. I think Lacazette scored 3 or 4 league goals over the entire season, which just simply wasn't good enough. But I think what people seem to overlook with Arsenal is that in order for Arsenal to get back to or close to where they want to be, there needs to be a complete reset. There needs to be a complete stripping back of everything and rebuild. And part of that rebuild means you're not going to take any shit from people that are going to jeopardize that rebuild. And what example does it set to that young group of players that you are basically banking on to deliver us back to where we want to be over the course of the next few years? If the captain turns up late, doesn't care, displays a bad attitude. And, you know, I've been told by somebody that was very, very close to the incident that, you know, this wasn't the first, second, third, fourth, or even fifth incident involving Aubameyang. This had happened 8-10 times before it got to the point where Mikel Arteta completely banished him and decided that enough was enough and he's not going to be back in the fold and in the setup. And I just think sometimes as a player, you can put a manager in an impossible position, because on the one side of it, he's losing a good striker who throughout the years has scored goals. Therefore, he's weakening his team. But if he lets you get away with it, he's undermining himself in front of the dressing room. He's almost sending the message to everybody else that you can get away with that and it's fine and it's acceptable. And from what I understand about the Aubameyang situation, the final straw was when he went away to visit his mum. And it's not that he went away to visit her because that was sanctioned, but it was that he turned up late back and also completely ignored the COVID protocol, which was at the height of our problems. It was right during that period where we had literally no team to put out. And Mikel Arteta couldn't stomach the fact that he was so irresponsible in the sense of, A, he was late and almost didn't give a shit and just completely went against what the club had allowed him to do. But B, that he would come back without a COVID test, without any of that, and just walked into the training ground and put the situation that was already a very bad one sort of put it in danger of becoming worse. And that was the problem.
Do you think he felt unbreakable, though? And by that, or I should say untouchable. And the reason why I say is I've always believed that because of the relationship that he developed with a certain YouTuber, he was able to get away with a lot, because a lot of these toxic supporters, they went on his side because of his friendship with said YouTuber, and he got away with it. Not from the club, but from the fans, or from certain, well, a lot of fans.
Yeah, I think that it was partly that, and it was partly what he'd done. You know, he'd almost, that FA Cup win for Mikel Arteta, he'd almost established himself as like a bit of a god within the group, because he scored two goals in the semi-final against Manchester City, two brilliant goals, and two goals in the final against Chelsea, and basically single-handedly won Mikel Arteta the FA Cup. So what he did was put himself right at the top of Mikel Arteta's books and sort of show his importance to the manager, used that to then obviously get that bumper contract, which was crazy money, £350,000 a week.
Yeah, they paid him a Champions League qualification bonus, even though you didn't get in there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. There was so much desperation to keep him, and Arsenal were so clear and obvious about that, that they almost gave him this feeling that he could do whatever he wanted and as and when he wanted. And I think he struggled with Mikel Arteta then almost turning on him. He was probably sitting there thinking, hold on a minute, I just won you the FA Cup. You just sanctioned the club giving me a deal worth £350,000 a week. Who are you now to come and have a go at me? Like, you've betrayed me, sort of thing. And he almost felt like Mikel Arteta had owed it to him to take his side, or owed it to him to let him get away with certain things. And that's why I'm glad that we've got a manager who doesn't take shit. And sometimes that's going to be to the detriment of the team. Like, we saw it for years. You know, Wenger at times used to let players get away with murder because he knew that on the pitch they would give him something that nobody else could, and they would get him over the line more often than not. But when you keep allowing that to happen, you create a rotten culture. And that's exactly what we've had at Arsenal for a number of years. And to think that someone, particularly a first-time manager, was going to come in and literally correct that within 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it's completely unrealistic. We've got so many players on the books of that football club that we're trying to sell and nobody is interested in. That we're sitting here saying, well, Torreira's worth 10, 15 million pounds. Guendouzi's worth... Hold on a minute. Everybody and their dog knows that their attitudes are not right. Everybody knows that we don't want them. Everybody knows that they don't want to be with us. And we've set a precedent by terminating people's contracts because of that's what's been necessary to get them off the books. So now if you're a club, if you're Fiorentina, for example, looking at Lucas Torreira, and Arsenal are telling you he's 15 million euros, you know that if you wait towards the end of the window and the player keeps pushing for it, Arsenal might well say, let's terminate that contract and get him out of here. In which case, we're paying again for a mistake that was made way before these guys came in. So there needs to be patience. I think last season showed progress, and I think they've earned the right to be given the opportunity to continue on this journey. And fingers crossed it takes us to where we want to be.
Bomba. Well, Phila, thank you so much for your time, man. Really, really appreciate it. It's been absolutely fantastic. We haven't done a stream in a while, man. So, it's a long time coming, long time coming. But before I let you go, let our viewers know where they can find you on all sorts of social media platforms, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate you having me. You can find me on Twitter at Harry Simi. You can find me on Instagram at Harry_Simi. I'm even on TikTok now as well, at Harry Simi. I set it up.
Yes, I've noticed.
A while ago. you can find me on all those things. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll basically see all the things I do and the Chronicles of a Gooner. If you're interested in Arsenal at all, or if you just want to support a fellow Gibraltar and trying to make it in between cooking chef that years outside and all of that business.
Playing your bouzouki as well, man. Come on.
I didn't even
ask you to get your bouzouki. I was being nice to you today.
Do you know what? I played for the first time on Friday night at an actual event, and oh my God, I was so rusty. Been ages. Been so long.
And actually, get some practice. Next time you come on, you'll play it.
That's brilliant. Exactly. Thank you so much, man.
No, my pleasure, man. Thank you so much. Well, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in. Everyone that's been watching live, it's been great. Everyone that's going to be watching it again, or should I say on YouTube, thank you very much for tuning in. Like, subscribe, tell your nunna, because I don't tell mine, I don't talk to her. But yeah, listen, before we go, I was going to drop this bomber on Instagram, but I'm going to do it right now. See, it's quite fitting that Harry, being an Onorosity fan, this is an Omonia podcast, that our next guest used to play for Onorosity, used to play for Omonia. Tomorrow night, Gobelia, 8 o'clock Cyprus time, we've got Dura on this podcast. Yep, Mikhail Duris, my guy, is coming on tomorrow. So get those questions ready. You didn't think that we could do it, huh? We've done it. Bameshilakamu.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.